Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, I was about to say, you had cell phones that ready to work?
Yeah.
That would be the cue instead of being the guy they're talking to. That's a little long for you.
I started to burn.
Oh, I saw that.
I know, Sean's right there.
Isn't it?
It was.
Yeah. Yeah, how about Michael? He's the master communicator, isn't he?
Oh, he got,
Yeah, I get that. He didn't let him off. I get that.
Hello, Tom?
Yes.
Hi, how are you?
Good, I am. You know, I called a couple minutes early, and it did not go through. And
That's okay. We're a little bit delayed, but we're live. We're on the air. And I'd like to just start off by saying welcome to the Coffee Clatch. I'm Marianne Russo. And every month I try to spotlight at least one internationally renowned children's foundation. And, you know, we do it to show our admiration and our appreciation. And many of the foundations you know, and many of them you do not know. And it's important that, you know, we stress the tireless efforts of these organizations that bring hope and support to so many of the families, not just special needs, but for, you know, for children that are struggling in a lot of different ways, and we're very proud to showcase them tonight. Every foundation or organization starts with a very special person, and tonight I have the pleasure of having the founder and president of Dreams for Kids, Mr. Tom Tuohy, as my guest. Dreams for Kids is a volunteer-based children's charity, and Tom has also authored a book, Dreams for Kids, Changing the World One Person at a Time. So welcome back, Tom.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you for having me. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening. Hopefully we have a great experience together tonight.
We'll have to be better than our last experience. Tom was our guest before, and we had technical problems, and I felt terribly that we weren't able to really showcase Dreams for Kids the way that I wanted to, because I'm very impressed with the foundation. And, you know, once we get into it, I'm sure, you know, I have described you and the foundation as stellar. So I'm sure that once we get into the interview, they'll understand why. So why don't we just get started? I mean, you were a practicing attorney, and you founded Dreams for Kids in 1989. And, you know, what inspired you to create this amazing organization, and how did it get started?
Well, I'll tell you, for all the mothers out there, it was my mother's suggestion to do this. It was my mother's suggestion because I was essentially one of those kids. We help at-risk kids, and we help kids with disabilities. And I don't have a disability other than the one that we call our first disability. It's poverty. And there was a situation when I grew up, my father disappeared when I was 8 years old. So my mother, you know, God love her, was a single parent with four children, raising them on her own with no support. And we lost our home, and we had a very, very difficult time for her to put school age. I was only 8 years old, and my oldest brother was 14. So it was a difficult time, and I felt that. And I, if not for my mother's perseverance, if not for who she is and the extraordinary person she was, if not for the support of others who stood for me, I would never have been able to become a lawyer. I would never have been able to create a life that was sustainable. So I knew I wanted to pay back, pay forward, if you will, and to do something. And then it was up to my mother to step up and say, hey, it's time right now. You reached your dream of being a lawyer. Now help other kids reach whatever their dream is. And that's how it started.
And, you know, what you have started, I mean, this is just amazing. When I was, you know, reading about it the other day, I just, you know, we will go into it, but, I mean, this is really a global effort that you've undertaken here. And, you know, first let's talk about what types of needs. I mean, you know, we speak about the children that you're helping. So let's, you know, be a little specific because, you know, our audience has children with special needs, different disabilities, but which, you know, your organization caters to. But you also have, you take care of a lot of other children too. So why don't you go into the children that you help?
Yeah, the at-risk is defined for, Marianne is defined for the general population. It's kids who live in poverty and kids who live in severe poverty where they are at risk because of the situation in their community, the situation in a school system which is broken, the situation in a family system which is not supportive. It might very well be broken. And it's very, extremely difficult nowadays for kids, especially in our country. There are upwards of 25% of kids, one out of every four born in the United States, are at risk, which is amazing. I mean, over 20% live in severe poverty in the United States. And we work around the world, and one out of every two kids born in the world today, one out of every two kids is at risk and lives in severe poverty. So that's who we reach out. Go ahead.
You know, I was going to say that I think that's, you know, people have the misconception that it's only the third world countries where the children really are disadvantaged and are impoverished. But, you know, it seems right here in the United States as well.
Absolutely. What I want people to really know is they are your neighbors. They may not live next door. They may not live in an affluent community that you're able to live in yourself, but they live in the next town. They live down the block and you didn't even know it. And as one of our dear friends, Clara Kirk, who started Clara's House Shelter, said, in this day and age, people are two paychecks away from living with her. And that's right. What's happened. And we've seen it. There are so many mortgage foreclosures. There are so many people who have lost their jobs. And they started out not really being able to afford the home that they were in. And many people were overextended. And what's happened across the country that's not being spoken about enough is what are the consequences of those phrases that we use? What are the consequences of the foreclosure crisis? You know, what are the consequences of the economic crisis? You know, what happens when a house is foreclosed on? I mean, what happens is someone goes from having two jobs and a six-figure income to not even having a home to live in. And there are many people that are shelters.
And, you know, it's on so many different levels because it trickles down and it affects the school systems and it affects different programs for the children. So, you know, we're not headed in a great direction. But, you know, as we said, you know, you have a lot of programs here in the United States. But I first wanted to start with your global efforts. And, you know, how extensive is your international efforts? What other countries are you working in?
Well, we work in, if you start with the very first event, when I mentioned Clara's House, we reached out. I want everybody to know this, how just a single event, just a single day of giving can turn into something that Dreams for Kids is today, because that's exactly what happened. And it grew organically. All we did was get a group of friends together, go to a homeless shelter on Christmas Eve, and we found 54 kids that were living there, doubled up on beds, sleeping on the floor. And we brought Santa Claus, and we brought gifts, and we brought food. And when we left that day, Clara said, thank you. And I said, it's the least we could do. And she said, no, you don't get it. If you show up today, these kids would have never known it was Christmas. We didn't have anything for them. So that's where it started. And when you mentioned where we work, It started in Englewood in the south side of Chicago in Clara's House Shelter. But when we found that out, the next year we said, we got to go to two shelters. And we did. And then we went to three. And by the fourth year, we didn't have any more time. So we said, let's bring them to one place. And for 16 years, we have brought over 1,000 kids in Illinois to one place, given them 5,000 toys, face painters, clowns, games, the United States Marines, live music. And it's called Holiday for Hope. And it's embraced by people of all faiths. And that event 4 years ago went global. And last year was in 30 countries around the world.
Well, and, you know, that's no small task. I mean, you know, that's a beautiful thing, and it's really important for the kids to be able to have some joy in their lives. But, I mean, your organization goes so far beyond that. I understand that you're, building schools and providing clean water and shelter. I mean, just sustainable things you need just to sustain life. So, why don't you tell us a little bit about the work that you're doing, and then we'll talk about how you're doing it and who you have doing it with you.
Yeah, and thank you for bringing it up, Mary Ann. In terms of how we're doing it, what exactly we're doing, let's talk about first, is that holiday event. It's not just a single, we don't believe in charity. The charity does not work. Charity is disempowering. And we consider ourselves to be a youth empowerment organization by giving people an opportunity to help themselves. And how we do that is we go to the most at-risk kids in the world, and we give them the opportunity to help someone else who has less than they do. And being reminded that something to give is so empowering. They begin to be the solution rather than the problem. The world looks at them differently. They look at themselves differently. And we do this in Kenya, in South Africa, in India, in Ghana, in Cameroon, in places around the world. We go to kids who the world looks at that they need a bag of rice, and we teach them to farm. It's that old adage that don't give someone a fish, teach them how to fish. And what we believe
I love that.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I love that because, it's so true. It's true. You're really empowering these kids. And, I think that the beauty of this is that you're not only empowering those that you're helping, but you're empowering the teams that you're getting involved to volunteer. So it's just such a beautiful effort. I mean, it's just such a children helping children around the world. It's just an amazing thing. The Dreams for Kids, the Dream Leader Conferences, and the Life-Changing Initiative events, why don't we talk a little bit about those, what they are and how people participate in them?
Yeah, what we do, and let's start with the United States, the Dream Leader Program is our youth leadership program. It's the program that I spoke about that gives at-risk kids the opportunity to be leaders, the opportunity to be generous, the opportunity to help someone else. And we do that by bringing them to universities around the country. And we bring 100 at a time. And they're the most diverse group of kids you could ever place in one room. They come from different social class, different race, religious background, and different forms of ability and disability. And you can imagine 100 of those kids in one room like the first day of high school that doesn't exist anywhere. And we break them up into diverse groups of 10. And they have social awareness discussion. They have cultural awareness discussion, icebreakers. And then they move on to social issues that are local and global. And then they pick by the end of the day. After they go back into the room and have skits, they have discussions with all 100. And they go up on the stage with groups of 10, and they tell the other 90 that they have chosen this local project, or they have chosen this global project. They're going to help build a school in Ghana. They're going to help drill a well in India. And that diverse group of kids move on for the next year often online and build that social project together by raising the funds and soliciting the support to make it reality. And what that does for them is not just help them change the world, because they are doing it, it helps them see past wheelchairs, skin color, religious belief, see who they are as a person. And if you can imagine, Marianne, and everybody that's listening, imagine if a generation grew up that way. Imagine if they grew up.
Oh, that's what we talk about all the time here on the Coffee Clatch. I mean, it is our children. It is the next generation that's going to change the world. And it's up to us to teach them compassion because, you know, with education will come compassion. And, you know, that's what we're all about here. And, I think, yes, that you're doing, I think that's what's going to make the difference is this generation is going to stomp the stigma and they're going to look past the disabilities and they're going to look past the social status and, you know, hopefully things are going to change. I mean, you know, look at the difference that you're making. How do you see the change in the teens that are volunteering? I mean, do you see a change in them as they start to be involved? I would imagine it's you know, unbelievable.
It's transformative. You see it right before your eyes. You see kids that, to give you an example, in one of our last conferences at Columbia College in Chicago, where they, at the end of the conference, they go to that same hall that they started in, all 100, and then they hold up a candle. They hold up a candle, and whoever wishes to tell the rest of them what this day meant to them. Most of the kids that speak are in tears. We had a producer that wanted to create this for a production come in from New York and said he had never seen a group of young people with such a community in his life. And they never knew each other 8 hours ago. He said, I've never seen anything
That's
like
amazing.
It.
Amazing.
Yeah, and then what they knew, at least... Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry,
go ahead. No, I didn't say that. To see that happen, I mean, we had a girl, you know, a guy stand up and he said, I have never spoken before in high school. He said, I have never spoken before a group. I'm the quiet one. He said, I'll never be that way again, and I'll never look at all of you the same. And the girl next to him, and he was a white kid from the North Shore of Chicago, and which is the most affluent area in Illinois. And the girl next to him was an African-American girl who was kind of the rapper, and she had the biggest personality in the room. And she held up her candle and looked at him and said, you know something? I would have never talked to you. He said, because you were the quiet one, and I would have judged you. He said, as a matter of fact, I'd have never talked to you because you're white. I never planned on ever talking to a white person. He said, I will never be the same again, and I'll never look at the world the same way. And the tears are running down her face. To see that happen in one day, imagine what we can do if we scaled it around our country and in distant places around the world. That'll transform the world.
You know, I think that's why it's so important. I know, you know, in the area where I live in my school district, the community service, children volunteering, is mandatory. You know, I think it's something like 120 hours that they need. And, you know, I can tell you that these kids are, as you said, they're transformed. I know my daughter has volunteered for, you know, disabled children at a horse camp, and my other daughter works at a lot of other, you know, different places, you know, for, you know, walks for autism. And it does, it changes them. They come home and, you know, they see and they understand and they're so much more accepting. Now, these teens that you have, do they actually go to the other countries and are they hands-on involved in these programs?
Well, in terms of going to other countries, we haven't scaled the program to that extent yet because we don't have the resources and funding. And, you know, it kind of breaks our heart because that's our model. That's what we wish to do. Right now it's a three-year-old program, and we built it up so that we can have these individual conferences and support them throughout the year in their social change initiatives. They all want to go. They all want to go to the countries to see it.
No,
they don't have the resources.
But as we said, there's plenty to be done here in the United States as well. You know, how would you know? There are a lot of programs that you have, and I'm debating whether we'll go into them first, or you know what? I think first we'll go into how does a teen, or I would assume you also have adult volunteers. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we our motto is changing lives.
So how does how do we find out about the local programs that you have? Are there chapters, or you know, how would somebody like myself who would like to come and have my children come and help? How would you find out what's available in your area?
Yeah, what we've done is the entry point for the organization in terms of what we can accomplish in someone's area is always Holiday for Hope. You know, it may only be, and I wanted to make this point on Holiday for Hope. It's not just a single day. What happens is the kids, before they get there, these are kids that are living in shelters or with the Boys and Girls Clubs, these kids agree to do community service after the event, to do something in their community in return for the generosity that's been given to them. And it's a very powerful experience for them. So what we do for people is we offer them the experience of hosting their own Holiday for Hope in the town or the village or the city that they live in. Now, if they happen to be around Virginia, Maryland, Washington, D.C., Illinois, Wisconsin, we have a presence and ongoing program and staffing so that we can support beyond Holiday for Hope. But right now, probably until the day, until we have the funds to do it, we haven't branched out where we have individual chapters. What's really neat about Dreams for Kids is Washington, D.C., came from one young person who was an intern for Dreams for Kids in the summer, said, I want to start Washington, D.C. And on his own, he did just that. And for 2 years now, they're going to be visiting the White House in 2 weeks, the kids in Washington, D.C. for Dreams for Kids. He has probably there on the Washington National Baseball Field for our other program, Extreme Recess. So a program can be built, and we can support the infrastructure of that and help it be built. Unfortunately, as an organization, we don't have the resources to go every place right now. So we have to invite everybody in probably at the easiest entry point, Holiday for Hope, which is coming up, which is great for everybody. If you want to be involved in Holiday for Hope, you don't have to go any further than your own city. So we can talk about that.
Okay. And you also have Life Extreme Recess, which just seems amazing to me because, you know, one of the biggest problems with, you know, our audience is the children, the special needs community that are, you know, disabled, you know, they're very isolated. And, you know, these events like Life Extreme Recess, I mean, just really lets them be a kid, and it lets kids without disabilities see the kid behind the disability. So tell us about the Life Extreme Recess because I love it.
Yeah, thank you so much, Marianne. That's I love it, too. It's 11 years old, and Extreme Recess came because we met a kid. Again, it was organically grown. We met a kid who was paralyzed playing hockey. He had slipped and tripped into the boards and broke his neck and never felt himself at the ice and hasn't felt anything since. He's a quadriplegic. And when we met him 10 years ago, when we met him, I had never personally and introduced to the isolated world of people that live with disabilities. I never knew what it was like. I was one of those people that looked away. Until JJ said to me, that's who the young boy we met. He said, you know what it's like being me now? I'm the same person. I'm just like you. I'm just sitting down, but here's what it's like. All day long, I look up, and not too many people ever look down. Did you know how tough that is? He said, no one ever even looked at
it. You know, and it's true because, you know, I think that's one of the most hurtful things that the parents on our show, you know, tell me is that there's an assumption that because there's a physical disability that the child does not have the capacity, that there's a problem with their intelligence. And, you know, nothing can be further from the truth. And, you know, I know for myself, you know, just from doing the show, you know, I look at people at people that with disabilities differently. You know, I'll go, you know, that's what's a great thing about what you're doing because you're really helping people understand that people with disabilities are just like everybody else, you know.
Absolutely.
And letting these kids interact and do this, you know, Life Extreme Recess, I mean, that just must be fantastic to see. So, you know, is it similar in some ways like the Special Olympics? I mean, in a way, that's what it sounded like to me.
No, not as much. And, we certainly love, the historic work that the Special Olympics has started right here in Chicago. And it is so great. It's a branded institution. It really is only for a few kids. You know, it's a grand event. There's a few kids, not a few. I mean, there's quite a few kids that plan all year long for this event. What we wanted to do is what JJ said to us that really made an impact. He said, "Do you realize 11 years ago," he said, that I'm one of the lucky ones, that I've played sports for 15 years. And the kids that are born like me in this town, in the city of Chicago, most of them have never played a sport in their life. He said, nothing exists. This was 11 years ago in Illinois. There were no adaptive sports programs for kids with disabilities. And he said, here's the other thing, too. The kids we work with that live in poverty, he said, they get driven in a bus to school. When school's out in summer, their families don't have adaptive vans. They don't leave the house. And so we said, you know what, let's start it. And we started a program, which you mentioned, that created the first sports program in Illinois, but it's really, really unique because we bring able-bodied kids in, and we want them all to be kids. We want them all to see past their own disabilities. And as we say as an organization, see past my disability first, and I might not have a visible one, but Marianne, if I started out talking about my disabilities, we wouldn't have enough time on this show.
We all have disabilities. Be both. Right.
Yeah, but we don't do that, though, do we? And yet we talk about somebody because they're sitting in a wheelchair, and all of a sudden that becomes who they are to us. And that's how we introduce them about what happened to them or what they don't have or what they can't do. And what our able-bodied kids say is, don't disability. Don't dismiss someone's ability, because it's so important to know that we all have disabilities and that every single person on the face of this earth has an ability. And we must embrace that. We must look with dignity at everybody. That doesn't just mean those with physical disabilities. It means those with Asperger's or autism or Fragile X. All of these kids that we work with, within the context of who they are, within the silence of the way they live, is a person with dignity that deserves to be looked at as someone who has ability. It deserves to be looked at as someone who has contribution to give to the world.
Well, the invisible disabilities sometimes are even harder for the children to live with than the obvious physical disabilities, because they're so misunderstood. And, as you said, one of the things that you do is you look for the gift. You bring out the gifts in the kids. You bring out the kid in the kid. And, that's something that, we try to do, too, here, is to, let people understand that physical disabilities, invisible disabilities, it doesn't matter. I mean, the emotions and the isolation are universal. And that's why, I think this program is great. I mean, you do some pretty extreme sports with the kids. What types of, activities do you have?
it makes me smile and laugh, is that we just have one of our featured events. We have events every month, and several sometimes. And the events we have range from the ones that all kids play. What we wanted to do is create something that was, if we were going to do it, we were going to overdo it. If these kids were denied everything, we were going to give them more than most kids ever get a chance to have. And so we started with the basics in soccer and baseball and football and tennis and golf, which golf gets a little less basic. And then we said, let's make it bigger than that. Let's make it horseback riding and rock climbing. Let's go even further. And the event we just had, water skiing. We have the Northwestern engineering students help design an adaptive chair, which many organizations use across the country now. It's a chair which is attached to a single water ski. It has two skis on either side that flare up so that the chair can't tip, and the boat pulls the skier 30 miles an hour. Imagine how exhilarating it is to go from your chair to from a pier, which you have never been on before in your life, and some of these kids in poverty have never seen a lake, and now they're in a chair, and as one of our kids said, I got a chance to say, hit it. I did, he did,
and I'll never be the same. They come back transformed. They come back knowing, as one of the teachers in the school said, they come back knowing they can tell stories about their summer vacation and that they have, as the teacher said, the wow factor. Kids look at them and say, wow, I wish I could do that. And
you're really giving them hope. It's amazing. You're giving, like you said, you're giving them dreams, but you're giving them hope. Because, you know, I think that people just, you know, figure, well, they're disabled, and that's it. They'll sit in the house. And, you know, you give them the opportunity to see that, you know, there is a life out there to be had.
Wow. And it's so quantifiable. They go back to school, the teachers have told us. That one story I just told you, the teacher said she never spoke before in class. You know, Carrie never spoke before. She was quiet. And we really didn't know how to bring herself out, bring her out of herself. And it's always tough to be the only kid in class with a disability, at least one that we can see. And she said, you know what?
Right.
When she came back from your summer, she couldn't stop talking. She has friends for the very first time, she said. And she's one of the most popular kids in class. Her grades have gone up. Her family has changed. That's what happens. And you mentioned the name. That wasn't us. What we are very aware of is this is not our organization. This is the organization the kids built. This is what they own. And unfortunately, we named this program for a while, and I don't know, it didn't seem too cool, and we were right, whatever it was before. And about 5 years ago, one of the young kids said, well, no offense, sir, but why'd you name it? Isn't it the kids program? You're right. And so we brought the kids together. We said, why don't you guys come up with a name? Marianne, it took them 5 minutes to come up with Extreme Recess. And
oh, it is extreme. I mean, everyone should really check out the website because he's downplaying it. It is really very cool, the things that, you know, you do for these kids. You know, and the thing is, I mean, once you break the isolation, these children with disabilities are so isolated for many different reasons. But, you know, some of them physically, you know, they're isolated because they can't get out of the house, and some of them are shunned by others because there's a stigma and they don't understand or they're frightened because of the disability. And, you know, we find it all the time. Once you break that isolation, it just opens up a whole new world for them, like, you know, you were just saying about the child that didn't want to speak. You know, it's an incredible thing. And you also have... I don't remember what the name of it was, but you also have a program that's a social networking. Now, is that social networking where the teen volunteers stay in communication with the children that they're helping?
Yeah, that's part of the Dream Leader program. You know, and all kids at Dream Recess are invited into the Dream Leader program. All our kids participate in as volunteers in the Holiday for Hope program. And what you're talking about is the social networking skills that they get a chance to meet with our board members, to talk to social networking experts, to be with our staff, to learn how it is to be responsible on Facebook, to learn how it is to be on Twitter, to learn what you can do to build relationships online and to build the online presence of your life in a way that is both responsible in a way that is also very empowering and in a way that helps them create a network of contacts for them.
Well, all of these programs that you have, I mean, obviously are costly, especially the Extreme Recess and the, you know, all of these holiday programs that you have. I mean, how do you fund these programs?
Oh, Marianne, I tell you what, it is so tough right now because of what everybody knows. We're in this global economic crisis. Our, like most small nonprofits, our individual donations are down 80%. And 90% of nonprofits' donations come from small donations. You know, so you're talking 90% of our funding is down 80%. And that's just tough because that means less kids. And the only way that we can support it is if people support us. And the good news is we've got one of the best ratios in the country. 90%. Our administration is only 10%, and that's actually as high as it's ever been. It's usually about 6 or 7%, and that means that when somebody gives $100, it means $90 goes directly into the programming to make these programs happen that we just talked about.
And that's where it's from. And unless we can enhance that, unless we can get corporate America, and that's what we ask people to do. We try to empower our donors by saying, we love to have your $100 or $1,000 donation. We'd love it even more for you to go to your place of work and to enroll the employee giving plan into Dreams for Kids, to enroll the corporate giving at the highest level so that we can put real dollars in your neighborhood and build Extreme Recess Holiday for Hope and the Dream Leaders. That's how we do it.
Well, you have some type of a sponsor, I think. I don't know if I'm using the right word. A sponsorship, I think, is $50 per volunteer, if I read that correctly. How does that work?
Yeah, but what we do with the volunteers, we want everybody to help create the event. So we want the kids to know that it just doesn't happen, too. So it's very nominal because many of our kids don't have much resources, but we never want it to be charity. So we'll start with the kids. They sell $10 worth of raffle tickets. And so they, in effect, contribute $10 for participating in the individual events. Now, the volunteers, we ask to contribute more, and depending on the event. Sometimes it's $20, sometimes $50. Most of the times it's $20, $25, because the volunteer is giving their time. But we want them to know, too, that it costs money to put it all together. And that if they participated on an individual $20 or $25 basis, it really did so by selling tickets to other people that would now be involved. If they did that collectively, we could host the event. If they didn't do that, we wouldn't have an event to host, especially nowadays.
Right.
So that's how we do that. That's how we do that. We engage everybody to participate in each event financially.
You also, authored the book Dreams for Kids, Changing the World One Person at a Time. Originally, your first book was Kiss of a Dolphin. So now this book really is an account of lives of modern day and, unsung heroes. So, I haven't had the pleasure of reading it yet. So why don't you tell me about this book and, what inspired you to write it? And, you have it for sale through the website also. So tell us about the book.
Yeah, I'd love to. Thank you so much. And I hope everyone gets a chance. One of your readers or one of your listeners already emailed me before the show. And what I want to encourage everybody, if I want to talk about the book a little bit, before I do, I want to let everybody know that if what you heard so far, which is what is in the book, if what you heard so far about our programs, about our kids, inspires you, if you want to, as some readers have said, take a journey, that will change your life. If you want to do that because you've read about one kid, one volunteer, one mentor, one community leader who did more than the next, that's been the history of Dreams for Kids. So this book's been all over the world, and I've been very, very fortunate because I wrote it for Dreams for Kids. All the money that we raised from the book goes to Dreams for Kids. So the reason why I wrote it is that I was at a conference, a speaker's conference, and I didn't know a soul. There were 1,000 people there. There was a woman sitting next to me, and she asked me what I did. They started to talk about Dreams for Kids, and she was taking notes. And the guy next to me said, "You know who that is?" I said, "No." And he said, that's Sam Horn." I said, "I still don't know." He says, "Well, that's one of the most prominent people in the writer's world. She basically has run the Maui Writers Conference and been the MC for 15 years. She's amazing." And I said, "Wow, she's like a reporter. She's taking notes." And that's how she is. She takes notes because she cares. What Sam Horn did that day is said, "Ask me when the book's coming out." And I said, "There is no book." And she said, "Oh, yes, there is." I said, "No, Sam, I think I know there's no book." She goes, "Yeah, it is. You're going to write it." I said, "Oh, Sam, there's definitely not a book now." It says, "No, I'll help you write it because you need to write this book, tell these stories, and give it as a gift to the world. And when you do, everything will change." And everything did. It was amazing. From that moment that the book was published a year later, our organization scaled from a Chicago organization to a national, international organization. And all of the wonderful things that happened because of that. And I revised the book to update it in May of this year. And originally it was called Kiss of a Dolphin because of an amazing experience we had with JJ
the quadriplegic athlete and a dolphin. And
I was curious. That was one of my questions, actually, was why? What was the reason for the title of the first book is the dolphin. You know, I think that anybody that reads this book or anybody that hears, you know, these stories, you know, has to be inspired and, you know, to understand that, you know, the corporate world right now is in crisis and, you know, hopefully they'll again be able to start, you know, helping you fund these projects. But, you know, every little bit helps and, you know, to purchase the book or whatever they can do, even volunteer their time. When you hear about the changes that it's made in so many people's lives, it's, you know, it's hard to say no. So, you know, I'm hoping that they do purchase the book. I know that I am. And, well, you know, also, you know, I was just curious because you've made a tremendous impact on so many children's lives. And I would imagine that they've made an impact on yours. So are there any that really stand out to you that, you know, just, you know, you'll never forget?
Yeah, JJ, obviously, you know, I'd certainly never forget him. I'll never forget the kid that I sat down next to. Actually, I sat down myself on an empty pier one day when we had our water sports day in Twin Lakes, Wisconsin. And Marianne and everybody, it was one of the most incredible experiences because it's just one of those moments that life delivers you where I sat down in a chair and I looked and the whole pier was empty. And all I could see on that pier were empty wheelchairs, walkers, and crutches. And all I could hear were the voices and the joy and the laughter of 75 kids in the water. It was a magical moment.
I can't even imagine.
I sat there, and
not only helping the children, you're really helping the families because it is, you know, heart-wrenching to have a disabled child and to see them not being able to participate and not being understood. So, you know, it's not just the child. I mean, you're really just offering so much hope to the entire family. It's
there
incredible.
There was a father. I walked to the parking lot, Marianne, and there was a father that same day that was on his, trying to dial. It looked like he was dialing on his cell phone. And I walked up next to him, and he looked up, and he said, I'm sorry. I'm trying to dial my wife. I can't remember the number. And then he put the phone down, and he was obviously really moved. And it just moves me to this day thinking about it. You know, and he said, I can't even really remember my own telephone number. He said, my son, Richard, he's 16 years old. And his whole life he asked us, can I play sports too? Can I play sports like my brothers and sisters? In his whole life, we could never say yes.
Right.
He just sat on. And now, this whole summer, he's played every sport he ever dreamed of, and today, he's a water skier. He said, all of you must have been touched by God to give my son so much happiness.
I don't know if you have a special needs child, but you know, we all do, and I can tell you that it is those moments that are just incredible because, you know, with all the trials and tribulations and the struggles of raising a special need child, it is the small triumphs that just change your whole world. So, I mean, what you're doing, like I said, is just, it's just incredible. And, you know, you're receiving it back because you sound like, you know, you really, you know, you really are impacted by all of it, which is just beautiful.
I'm the luckiest guy in the world. I mean, I can't believe I am absolutely the luckiest guy in the world to be doing this work. Yeah, it is just, we all, you know, my mentors, you'll read about in the book, I met my mentors when I was 19 years old, brought me to Cabrini Green, you know, one of the toughest housing projects in the world, and Jesse White, he went on to become Secretary of State. And that's when I learned that my situation wasn't bad at all. That's when I learned that I had something to give. And I met other mentors, you know, Father Wally, about him. But what they taught me, Marianne, was not only that I had something to give, but that anything that was given to me, that I need to pay it forward. And then when I did, as Jesse told me, he said, you will realize that it will become a selfish endeavor everything you give, you realize comes back to you tenfold. And you're almost embarrassed by it.
Right. It's a great feeling.
Yeah.
I also just want to, before we go off the air, I do want to make sure that I do make a few mentions, that your website is dreamsforkids.org.
Yes.
And on it they will find your blog, which is just so touching. I read it today, and it is beautifully written, and, you know, it's really worthwhile for everybody to take a listen. And the videos are just fantastic. You must have loved watching and making those videos because, I mean, they're so powerful. I mean, you can feel the transformation as you're watching them. So this is a wonderful program. And, you know, as I've been saying in the promotions, you know, I handpick the organizations myself who I want to showcase on the Coffee Clutch. And, you know, this obviously is one of them. It's really making a very big difference for a lot of people. And, you know, people can do things like having fundraisers, and you have merchandise, you have beads, Uganda beads, and T-shirts, and the book, like I said. So, you know, there are small ways that people can help, and hopefully that, you know, we'll find some bigger ways for people to help, too, because this is just such a worthwhile program.
There is something I wanted to offer to everybody, and it is a small way, but I think a real powerful way, is that book. Although it's listed at $15.95, and that's what it sold for, or sells for on Amazon and all that, if they did send me an email, if they did, you know, say that they were on the Coffee Clutch, and we'll give that book for $5 to anybody that mentions that they listened today, and just $5 plus the shipping to where they live. And what we love to do that for is because it gives them a starting point with Dreams for Kids. They can be inspired by our history, and when they complete the book, there'll be two pages that are titled How You Can Change the World. And there are suggestions on how you can do just that. So I'd love to do, if anyone wanted to send an email, absolutely love to do that. And I think another little way, you know, which is really kind of a contemporary way, that I would ask and kind of challenge everybody right now, is if they could text anybody that, well, look, everybody's got their cell phone now, if they're on it. If they texted DREAMS, DREAMS, to 85944, simple as that. They text the word DREAMS to 85944, automatically a $10 donation would be made to Dreams for Kids. And,
I thought that ended on the 10th. I didn't realize that. I would have promoted that. I was reading about that. I thought it was only the first 10 days of October. Okay, great.
Yeah. So, and anybody else, send an email, and we'll find the way for you to get involved, because that's what Dreams for Kids has always been. And then together, we'll create something that doesn't exist yet. How about that?
Well, that's great. And, you know, I'm going to be ordering a few, and we will be giving them as a giveaway to some of the people in our audience. So, you know, I'll be emailing you later on today. But, I did want to thank you for coming back, and I did want to showcase your foundation because, you know, you're doing great things. And like I said, only a parent of a child with a disability could understand what a Christmas means, what playing a sport means, what having another teen treat you like another teen and not like an invalid means. So, you know, you're just making a big difference for a lot of people, and I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you to everybody for taking the time out to listen, hopefully be inspired, and hopefully be, as Gandhi said, you know, the change we all wish to see in the world. If we all do whatever we can do, the world will change.
Oh, it's coming.
Oh, it's coming. Yeah.
Well, thank you again. I appreciate you for coming, and, you know, let us know if you ever have any events coming up that you'd like us to promote for you, and we'd love to share with the audience.
Love to do that. Thank you so much, Marianne. Thank you, everybody.
Okay. As I end the show every day, you are your child's best advocate. If not you, then who? Become an informed, educated parent. Thank you for joining us tonight at the Coffee Clutch.